finishing up our series of lessons drawn from the first six chapters of the book of Daniel. So turn to Daniel chapter 6 tonight. Daniel chapter 6. Tonight's lesson is entitled "When They Throw You to the Lions," so that you know what chapter 6 is going to be about. But one of the things that I think we sometimes forget is that we are not aware, or something that we're not aware of even, is that we're not aware of just how prevalent persecution is today of those who even mention or strive to wear the name of Christ. I mean, we read about it in Scripture. We read about it in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 23 through 27. We read about what things Paul went through when he says he suffered with stripes above measure, in prisons more frequent, in death often. Of the Jews, five times I received 40 stripes, save one. Thrice was I beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. Thrice I suffered shipwreck. A day and a night I've been in the deep, in journeyings often, in perils, in perils of water, in perils of robbers, in perils by my own countrymen, in perils by the heathen, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren, in weariness and painfulness, in watchings often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness. That's what Paul wrote in 2 Corinthians, which is before you get to the account of his imprisonment in Caesarea, his arrest in Jerusalem, his being sent to Rome, and his shipwreck there on the way to Rome, and then his imprisonment in Rome, and then his ultimate imprisonment in Rome that led to his death. All of that's before that. And we are aware that in the first century world, a great number of people were sentenced to death in the arenas, fed to the lions, burned at the stake, hung on a cross, crucified, beheaded, boiled in oil, all of those things. But we don't realize that those type of things continue to happen today. Now, I'm not going to give you a long list of those things. I just want to, for those of you who are interested, there is a website called persecution.org in which you can go and they will give you what will amount to a current status of all kinds of persecutions that happen in the world. And they can range from the kind of persecutions that are happening in the United States where we've got people being... like in the last couple of weeks, you've had a prospective student of a state-supported college being denied entrance to that college because of his religious faith. You've got students in high school and junior high who have been kicked out of class because they wore a T-shirt that talked about Christ or mentioned the name of Christ. You've got just in the last month or so, you've got a teacher in high school who was told you can no longer teach here because you have a Bible on your desk that you read during your private time. And so we have a lot that happens that are just like that, that are going on. And we need to understand that, in other words, that we will find ourselves perhaps in the same sort of situation that Daniel was in Daniel chapter 6. Because Daniel was dealing with persecution based upon his faith. Now, before we read Daniel chapter 6, let me inform you of a couple of things that will help you to picture what is going on here. First of all, in Daniel chapter 6, Daniel is about 80 years old when they called for the lions. So don't picture a young man as we read this chapter. He's about 80 years old. All right. Second, the thing that you need to remember is that the lion's den was the primary form of capital punishment to the Medeans and Persians, just as the furnace of fire was to the Babylonians and stoning was to the Jews and crucifixion was to the Romans. It was a means of certain violent death. And so you need to realize that this was a planned thing. And in fact, what we have now understood through archaeology is that a specially constructed, basically domed underground den was constructed for these lions to be in, and people were thrown in from the top so that they would land in there right amongst the lions that have been kept hungry, so that they could instantly be shredded, basically. And if for some reason you landed down there and the lions didn't attack right away, they could make certain that you would be in there long enough that eventually the lions would get you no matter what. Because there's no place to go, no way to climb out because the walls curved, nothing that you could do to get out of there. And so keep that in mind as we look at the chapter. So let's start with chapter 6 and verses 1 and verse 1, and we'll work our way through, and then we'll draw some lessons from what happened to Daniel. So Daniel chapter 6, beginning with verse 1. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be over the whole kingdom, and over these three governors, of whom Daniel was one, that the satraps might give account to them so that the king would suffer no loss. So apparently Darius used some of the men from the cabinet of Belshazzar, the king that had just been conquered, and Daniel is one of those chosen to help rule. Then this Daniel distinguished himself above the governors and satraps because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king gave thought to setting him over the whole realm. Verse 3 is probably a key to why persecution begins to happen. Because Darius is pleased with Daniel. Darius sees in Daniel and what the text says is an excellent spirit, and he's contemplating putting even more responsibility on Daniel's shoulders. And look at verse 4. In verse 4, we begin to see that jealousy rears its ugly head. So the governors and satraps sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find no charge or fault because he was faithful, nor was there any error or fault found in him. And then these men said, "We shall not find any charge against this Daniel unless we find it against him concerning the law of his God." So the governors and satraps thronged before the king and said thus to him, "King Darius, live forever. All the governors of the kingdom, the administrators and satraps, the counselors and advisors have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whoever petitions any god or man for 30 days, except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish this the decree and sign the writing so that it cannot be changed according to the laws of the Medes and Persians, which does not alter." Therefore, King Darius signed the written decree. Now, here's a case of jealousy, and they come up with a scheme, and they're using the law of the Medes and the Persians to get their scheme, and we'll talk a little bit about it in a minute. But essentially what it is that they find themselves, the king finds himself being tricked by people who flatter him. And he knows that he's been tricked later on, and he knows he cannot do anything about it. But look at what happens. "Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home. And in his upper room, with his windows open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees three times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since early days." Now, there's a lot there, but essentially, Daniel hears about it, and doesn't change a thing. He keeps doing what he's always done. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God, and they went before the king and spoke concerning the king's decree. Have you not signed a decree that every man who petitions any god or man within 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? And the king answered and said, this the thing is true according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which does not alter. And so they answered and said before the king that Daniel, who is one of the captives from Judah, does not show due regard for you, O king, or for the decree that you have signed, but makes his petition three times a day. And the king, when he heard these words, was greatly displeased with himself and set his heart on Daniel to deliver him. And he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. Then these men approached the king and said to the king, know, O king, that it is the law of the Medes and Persians that no decree or statute which the king establishes may be changed. And so the king gave the command, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. Now let's go ahead and stop right there. What we're seeing here is an example of how the world operates. The world quite often will fix its eyes on Christians and do everything it can to silence Christians. And we have two possible outcomes or two possible ways of dealing with what the world will attempt. And the world will always attempt this. Today, the persecutions that are most prevalent in the world are those persecutions of people who name the name of Christ in countries that are Islamic in nature. What we need to realize is that those Islamic nations were the birthplace of Christianity. And now, they are the place where Christianity is being silenced. And why did that happen? It happened because Satan worked to raise up something that would counter Christianity, something that could be offered in place of it in the eyes of men, that would give him a mechanism that would help him, that would allow him to, through the efforts of man, try to silence those who speak for God. Same thing is happening here. Here is Daniel. Daniel is doing a great job. In fact, the king understands that Daniel is doing a great job. And remember, the king says that he's contemplating, because of that excellent spirit of Daniel, he's contemplating putting him in charge of more. And it's the jealousy of people who realize that Daniel can't be bought, that Daniel is only going to do what is right, that Daniel stands in the way of whatever plans they might have for themselves, they decide they need to get rid of Daniel. And they work the system. The Medes and the Persians, because they were a conglomerate of kingdoms that had been conquered and welded together into some form of confederation, they had an ironclad rule that once a law was established and signed by the ruling member of the kingdom, that law could not be changed. And they took that understanding and they used it to trick the king. That's why we read, when we get on down to verse 14, that when the king realized what had happened, we read in the text that he was greatly displeased with himself. Now, he could be mad at the people who manipulated the law, but he was displeased with himself for allowing that manipulation. We need to realize that people manipulate the law all the time. And today in the United States, people are manipulating the law and interpretation of the law with the so-called separation of church and state and things like that. We're going to see that happening more and more. But what can we do? What should we do? Should we just back off so that nothing will happen to us? Or should we do what Daniel did? The first thing we see Daniel doing is that Daniel kept on being what he's always been. Daniel kept on being someone who always lived rightly. Verse 4 tells us that his opponents sought for anything that they could accuse him of or see evidence of corruption of. In other words, they set up a sting operation. They went through his files and his trash cans. They hid in the bushes, watched him. You know, I mean, that's the kind of imagery we should probably picture in our minds. And they looked for anything, any hidden dirt on him. And they couldn't find anything. Because Daniel never lived that way. Daniel didn't suddenly realize that he was under surveillance and scrambled to cover his tracks like we've seen many governing officials in our day. I mean, there was no Watergate or Whitewater or Travelgate or Nannygate or any other kind of gate in his life. There wasn't anything like that. He was absolutely free from corruption in the present because he had always been free from corruption in the past. He was already faithful, and so he continued to be faithful. Occasionally, you'll watch an interview with athletes before some sort of big important game, and you'll see a reporter ask, "Well, how do you intend to handle this biggest game of your career?" And they're always looking for a story, and you know, hoping that the athlete will reveal something new. But most of the time, athletes will say something like this: "I'm just going to go out and do what I've been doing every day in practice since the beginning of the season." And certainly that is exactly the key to the type of response to the world that we should make. We should keep doing everything that we normally do. In other words, we don't wait until the day of the race to start getting into shape. You don't wait until the day of the game to start learning to pass the football. You don't wait for the day you're investigated to start living a life free from corruption. You live that way every day regardless. Story is told of a 12-year-old boy who was a key witness in a high-profile lawsuit. One of the lawyers, after questioning him most severely, asked him, "Your father has been coaching you, telling you how to testify, hasn't he?" "Yes, sir," replied the boy. At that point, the lawyer thought he had won his case. "Well," he continued, "just tell us what your father told you to say." "Well," the boy said, "Dad told me you lawyers would try to tangle me in my testimony, but if I would just be careful and always tell the truth, I could say the same thing every time." And of course, he lost the lawsuit, the lawyer did. So what do you do when they call for the lions? You don't change a thing. You keep on being what you've always been. If you've been faithful, you'll continue to be faithful. Of course, the assumption behind that is that you have been working on being what you ought to be as a Christian all along. Now, once they rear their ugly head and they begin to wield their power, what do we do then? Look at verse 10. "Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home, and in his upper room with his windows open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees three times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since early days." Daniel's habit since early days was to pray three times a day in the upper room of the place that he called home, with his windows open, praying toward Jerusalem. And upon hearing the news of this new law that would punish him with a trip to the lion's den, he doesn't panic. He doesn't run upstairs and draw the drapes or close the window. He simply continues doing what he's always done. So you keep on doing what you've been doing, provided what you've been doing is right, and you keep on doing what you ought to do, no matter what. And then what happens? Well, here we, let's skip on down to about verse verse 16. When they arrest him and they cast him into the den of lions, I want you to see what the king says. Okay? Look at verse 16. But the king spoke, saying to Daniel, "Your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you." Now keep in mind, this is a pagan king. He has, we don't know how long he's been king exactly at this point, but Daniel has already impressed in him something that we've got to understand needs to be impressed in our lives, and that is who we put our trust in. And he reminds Daniel, you put your trust in God, keep putting your trust in God. God can deliver you. And that's exactly, that level of trust is not something new in Daniel's life. Remember in chapter 1, the issue of the king's food, Daniel's trust was there. Remember in chapter 2, and the confidence Daniel had that he could interpret the king's dream. Remember in chapter 4, when Daniel had the confidence that God would tell the king the truth. And remember in chapter 5, when Daniel trusted God enough to turn down honor and prestige. Daniel trusted in God. And the king urges him to keep that trust. Now notice what happens. All right? So then a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den. Now remember, it's a dome, and the mouth of the den is a hole in the ceiling, and they've put a cover stone over it so that even if it's possible to somehow scale the wall that curves, there's no way to get past that cover stone. In other words, as far as they're concerned, this is a done deal. Those are hungry lions down there. They are going to devour Daniel. But Daniel is trusting God, and Daniel's king is trusting God. Now notice what happens in verse 18. Now the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting. And no musicians were brought before him. Also, his sleep went from him. So verse 18 says that the king spent the night fasting. Fasting is a term all throughout the pages of Scripture that is always associated with prayer and petitions to God. Here is a pagan king praying to Daniel's God, not sleeping, spending the whole night fasting and praying on behalf of Daniel. Yeah, he got tricked, but he knows that Daniel trusts this God, and he trusts Daniel, therefore he's trusting in this God to somehow come up with something that he can't fathom. How in the world could anybody fathom that what was about to occur has occurred? But look at the next line, verse 19. Then the king arose very early in the morning and went in haste to the den of lions. And when he came to the den, he cried out with a lamenting voice to Daniel. The king spoke, saying to Daniel, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions?" Now, the language that is used to pen this picture for us is telling us that the king has his doubts, but he knows that Daniel's God is the living God, and he knows that Daniel has trusted him, and he's hoping it, and he's been praying all night that Daniel would find deliverance somehow. But remember when Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were thrown into the fire? They said God would deliver us no matter what. Whether it's deliver us from your hands through death, or whether it's delivering us from the fire itself, God will deliver us. And Daniel knew that he would be delivered one way or the other. But it's almost like God intended to make a statement through Daniel, which I sometimes think he wants to make through us as well. And so we read in verse 21. Then Daniel said to the king, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths so that they would not hurt me, because I was found innocent before him. And also, O king, I have done no wrong before you. I've got a picture that I've saved on my computer. I don't know. I've tried to find out who the painter is. In fact, there are two paintings that are done by this artist, and they're both of Daniel in the lion's den. And it has an old man with a receding hairline standing in this lion's den, and there are lions behind him. He is praying, and there are lions behind him that look hungry and menacing. And Daniel's got his back to them in both of the paintings. That's probably what I imagine really happened. He could turn his back on those lions because God had taken care of it. Here he says he sent an angel. Who shut the lion's mouth. I don't know how that happened. I don't know exactly how that occurred. Nobody does. Nobody saw it. But Daniel's alive. And look at what happens next in verse 23. Now the king was exceedingly glad for him and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. Remember, they have to remove that cover and they have to lower something down to take him up. They have to pull him up through the middle of the hole. And so Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no injury whatever was found on him because he believed in his God. Even when throwing him through that hole into the thing, he didn't even sprain an ankle. Now think about that, an 80-some-odd-year-old person. You drop them through a hole down for about 12 feet or so, 20 feet, maybe more. You're going to think that they're going to get hurt. That's usually what happens. That's usually what draws the lions to them, is that you get dropped in there, you get hurt, and at the very least scraped and a little bit bloody, and it draws the lions. But not anything was found. No injury at all was found to Daniel, because God had intervened. I like what happens next. And the king gave the command, and they brought those men who had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions, them, their children, and their wives. And the lions overpowered them and broke all their bones in pieces before they ever came to the bottom of the den. So they start throwing them in from the top, and these lions are let loose now. And before they even reach the bottom, every bone in their bodies have been broken by these powerful lions. And then King Darius wrote. And this is interesting. He is writing. This pagan king is writing. And he writes this. To all peoples, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth. Peace be multiplied to you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom, men must tremble and fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God and steadfast forever. His kingdom is the one which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall endure to the end. He delivers and rescues. He works signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, who has delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. And so this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. And so here is a decree. And remember, he writes it just like the decree that threw Daniel into the lions. And he makes a decree that will last for the entire length of the Persian Empire, that the whole kingdom remember how God delivered Daniel. You know, sometimes we think to ourselves, you know, we can never endure those type of persecutions that might come upon us. But you know, Daniel learned to trust God very early. And he continued to trust him every day. And I think if we do the same thing, if and when that kind of persecution comes down, we can face a lion's den too. Because we've got the same God who's on our side. This evening, let's encourage one another in our faith, realizing that Jesus has said He would never forsake us. He would always be with us. And He is the same today and as He was yesterday. He is the same God who delivered Daniel. He can deliver us. Well, together we stand and sing.